Welcome to the Saver F&B podcast. I'm Matt Geiger. We're going to go through some contracts today. I know it's not a super exciting topic, but I think it's a necessary topic, especially if you're new to the vendor lists, new to the catering business, new to the wedding business. It's one of those things that seems a little daunting, but I hope it's not going to be. I thought the biggest way or the easiest way for me to kind of go over with at least my perspective on it, not that it's, you know, law or anything, was to go through my personal contract that I have with my catering company. Now, I suggest if you don't have any sort of contract, look at your competitors, go on people's websites, request proposals from people in your industry. There's no shame really in getting some outside feedback, especially if you haven't done anything like this before. You know, for my personal take on it, I don't want, you know, an hour long read or a 30 minute read. You know, mine printed out is some pretty thick wording, but even with the thick wording and everything, it's still four pages. I can read this in, I don't know, 3-4 minutes. If I really wanted to take my time, maybe 10, if I wanted to itemize out. But if your customers are going to get bombarded and, you know, feel a little, feel like it's a lot for them, it could be a deterrent in your proposal process, right? So you guys have heard me on my previous episodes. I like to eliminate friction where I can, and I can keep my contract as simple as possible with addressing things, especially our personal needs, then I'm going to try to do that. So, and now I am open for criticisms for sure, because I have not had a lawyer go through this. I'm sure there might be some loopholes. I try to be as meticulous as I can, but that doesn't mean mistakes got made. I know that there's a lot of things in here that maybe are not lawyer jargon, but more so our personal policies. And as we've done business over the years, we've hit a few snags or hit a few scenarios where it's like, we don't want to deal with this again. Let's put it in our contract. So then if we ever are hit with, you know, questions or concerns about something, it's already there. Or God forbid something happens on site that's in your contract and you have a disgruntled client. It's a lot better to have those scenarios listed out somewhere for people to see publicly, so that you kind of have those chips in your pocket to say, well, you know, and of course you'd never argue, but at least you have something to defend yourself. You have, you know, stipulations in here to prevent those things. So let's just dive in. In the beginning, I wasn't requiring actual physical signatures. More so, it was a disclaimer on every proposal that once you've made payment, that you are agreeing to these terms. They're getting this from their first proposal through all the revisions up to their first payment and all the way through their final payment. Every single time they receive the updated quote, updated invoice, updated proposal, they are going to see this at the bottom of it. So the first thing I put there was initial quote will be honored for 30 days from date sent. If not confirmed within 30 days, pricing is subject to change. Now, this is for in your booking process. Sometimes it could help move things along a little quicker and get those deposits in to get your calendar more filled. And this is just a business practice I was seeing from my competitors. And for the first 4 years, I did not have this on my contract. However, it has helped a little bit. And have we increased prices from previous contracts? No, in general. If something crazy happened and I know that a price on their proposal is definitely wrong, then I would be open to it. But so far, I haven't had to change anybody's contracts, the pricing anyways, between the time that they got the proposal to the time that they actually booked. And now, mind you, some people, initial proposals, it could be a 2 or 3 month process before they actually sign with you. I'd like to get that process shortened up, but some people's events are out 2 years and they are waiting on proposals from other people and other businesses that maybe aren't as efficient or get these things out to them in a timely manner. We try to get it out right away. So a lot of times if people are not going to make their decision, it's not necessarily because of something you've done. A lot of times they're just waiting for other proposals. because people do go get your competitors' proposals and review them. So I added that to the top of the contract because, you know, in the light of the industry lately, prices have been changing quite a bit. I know my beef in the last 2 years has gone up over 30%. So obviously there were some price changes in there. Did I change people's proposals that were already booked and confirmed? No. Were there some people that I updated the system and the prices went up and their prices changed in between them getting the proposal and their booking? Yes. If they contacted us about it and questioned it, I'm totally fine referring them back to that price. We want to make sure customer service is at its highest, and we understand how on a large event things can, just one small change, you know, times 300 people can be quite big. So that's the first thing it says on the contract. And then in bold, the first thing above the actual terms itself says note by paying deposit and or full bill, you are agreeing to terms and conditions. Meaning once we receive any sort of payment on this and we are solidified in our date, as far as we see it, we've had a verbal agreement that you're going to honor what's in these terms. Now, how legal is it? I've heard mixed reviews from other businesses, other colleagues of mine saying a lot of times this will be fine because they get it so much and they get it before they sign, that there is a due diligence clause in a lot of contracts that says they saw it, it was there, they didn't do their due diligence to read something, then they would be at fault, especially if it's big and bold and that's the first thing that they see on the terms. If it was hidden in there, there might be some argument for it, but I just want to be crystal clear with my clients. And then how I scheduled everything in here is mostly due to the biggest questions we get asked the most. So right off the bat, the first line item is final changes. My contract reads final changes to the event, including but not limited to timeline, guest count, food, service, and rentals must be done 14 days prior to the event. Saver First Choice Catering, which is my business, will not be responsible if client makes changes that result in fees or fines due to vendor contracts or venue contracts or to menu resulting in lack of food after deposit has been made. Now, there hasn't been very many situations where, like this says, if there's fees or fines due to venue contracts. A lot of this has to do with if they book their catering service before their venue and they end up at a venue that charges an additional fee, which most of them, if they do charge a fee, is pretty substantial. It's 10%. And it's covered in here too. We pass that to the client. So if they had booked their catering, let's say it was a $5,000 catering, before they got their venue, they get their venue, and now the venue hits me with a $500 venue fee, then that would get passed to the client. Now, again, typically venues are booked before their caterer, but if that hasn't happened and it happens in reverse, that's why this is in here. Of a menu resulting in lack of food after deposit has been made. The only reason I put that in there, because when we do our proposals, we make sure that there's enough food and enough items that your guests are going to be filled. Now, are there exceptions to that? Of course. There's light hors d'oeuvre parties for doctor's offices or, you know, things like that where it's not supposed to be a meal, but they want something nice to offer their guests. That's totally different than, like, say, a home cocktail party or an hors d'oeuvre party. That it's just a different circumstances. So the one circumstance where I had to add this in was there was a mother of a bride. We had their menu set. They wanted to do heavy hors d'oeuvres instead of like a full meal. Whenever we do full or heavy hors d'oeuvre parties, even if they're nice small bites, we like to include at least one or two fulfilling things, whether it's a slider, a small pasta, something that's of substance that nobody's going to leave hungry, because there's only so many like little mini crab cakes you can eat. You're not going to get full. So for us, we like to put that in, put something heavy in there. So it had been booked. It was closer to the event. maybe a month out. Mother of the Bride calls, wants to change the menu. And it was one of those little things that slips through the cracks, and she took the sliders off. So they were left with a lot of small bites only passed around and no stations or anything. And even though in our invoice we had put, you know, this menu may not, you know, fill your guests, because again, we're very upfront with people. We want them to know and never open up to as if we made the mistake, because if we make the mistake, we'll absolutely honor that. But if we give you suggestions on how to make your event the most successful, we never want to sell you something you're not going to utilize or put so much staff or put food on there. The last thing we want to do is do more prep and more food and more stuff for people that aren't going to eat it. So that's at least our philosophy. So in this scenario, they took off the sliders, and everybody they left a salad on there and a couple other things. And lo and behold, people were hungry at the end. And then the mother of the groom was upset that there wasn't enough food. And we didn't really know what happened in the situation. Luckily, I can pull up my software, my catering software on my phone. And I looked at it and I saw the previous emails. And then I pointed out to the mother of the groom. It's really a touchy thing, because you don't want to ever have a situation on somebody's special day. But when there's upset people, we have to get to the root of the cause, not in a pointing fingers way, on a just simply how this happened way. And what we had discovered was that 3-4 weeks before the event, actually, this was before we had the 2 weeks out. It was about a week or two before the event that the mother of the bride had called to remove some stuff off of the proposal. So, and then on the bottom of the proposal, it did say there wasn't enough, you know, necessarily enough food to fill everybody, just as a disclaimer. It wasn't in the contract or anything, but this is how we added this in. So it doesn't happen, but just to cover us, we want to make sure that these details are in this contract, so that people reading it will think about this through the proposal process and trust that we are looking out for their best interest, so that things like this don't happen. Because the last thing we want is an unhappy person or an unfed person. And a caterer definitely doesn't want any hungry people at the end of their event. So that's the final changes. The next line item would be refunds and cancellations. So we have a special circumstance to our refunds and cancellations. A lot of competitors of mine just do a non-refundable refund. I try to work with people to make it as realistic as possible. And I know that this is going to take a while, so I might actually split this up into two separate videos, because it just really is worth getting into each one of these things. So our refund policy, I'm going to read it for you real quick and then explain. So full refunds minus admin fees and tasting fees will be given back to the client if canceled further than 90 days out. Admin fees equal 5% of current invoice or $300, whichever is greater. 60 to 90 days prior to the event, 50% of the deposit will be returned to the client. Any cancellation 30 to 59 days prior to the event, 30% of the deposit will be returned to the client. And then in bold, I say, if any event is canceled within 30 days of the event, no refund will be given on the 50% deposit. If the client has yet to pay full 50% deposit, all refunds will be based on the 50% of the total event value. If partial payment does not equal to or exceed percentage of refund to be issued back to client, no refund will be given. If client is due a refund, Saver First Choice Catering will have full discretion on when to send out payment to client, not exceeding 6 months from refund accept date. So why have this tear down policy instead of saying once you book, that's it? Is because the closer we get to your event date, especially where I'm at in Southwest Florida, for me to rebook that date gets harder and harder and harder. For instance, a lot of these people book a year out, year and a half out. So the closer we get to the event, the harder it is for us to fill that date, which is why the less percentage of the deposit I'll give back. No matter what, though, we always give the client an option to use their deposit towards a future event with no penalties, because we don't want to just take your money. It's more so we had a Saturday, which is the most booked day for our personal business, and for us to refund it or for us to refund it and not be able to rebook, now we're putting you know, the business in jeopardy a little bit. So we always try to find the most fair way to do stuff. And we always look at our competitors to see what they offer. I see a majority of them is no refunds on their deposit. I think that if it's 3 months out, our chances are more out. The chances of us rebooking that date are fairly good. Not like guaranteed by any means, but fairly good. So that's why we have that kind of tiered down. If it's more than 90 days out, we'll give you all your money back minus like $300 or 5%. You also have to understand that there is a proposal process. Could have spent days, weeks, or even months, and tons of emails back and forth to nail down your proposal, to get your food choice, to get your rental, your rental choices down. Maybe we've already called your rentals in. Even if it's a year out, we like to reserve the rentals if we don't have it in house. There's just a lot of admin stuff that goes into your event beforehand. So that $300 on your event, that is going towards that labor and time that we've already spent getting you all worked out for that event. So, and then 90 days out, we give you your full, 90 days out, we give you the full 60 to 90. We give you half of your deposit back. 30 to 60, we give you 30% of your deposit back. And then anything under 30 will be non-refundable. Now, again, you can always use that deposit to go to your next event, and we won't take any fees. We'll keep the deposit. And if your next event is a half the size, then it is what it is. We'll honor that 50% deposit just to give you peace of mind. And then we've had very few, but we've had a few weddings cancel, and that, you know, we've had one postpone for 2 years, and they actually use it for like a 70th anniversary or a 70th birthday for their grandparents. It was really beautiful. And so we try to work with people as best we can within our means. The next line item on here we had to do after COVID, I know a lot of people added this kind of stuff in, is our disaster pandemic clause. I never thought we would have to do something like that. But should a disaster such as a hurricane, which does happen, but hurricane, inclement weather, flood, government shutdown, or anything of the sort happen and you choose to cancel your event, the terms of this contract still hold true. You may always postpone your event indefinitely at no additional cost, and your deposit will roll into your postponed date, which is what we just touched on. So with a disaster pandemic, we'll still honor exactly this contract with no changes. I ran into a little bit of an issue during COVID. We had just started the business. And, you know, we lost a good amount of events afterwards, but we had just started, so it wasn't as bad. Like a year or two, almost 2 years later, we got hit with Hurricane Ian. And that was just a couple years ago. And for that, we had 17 events cancel because their venue was gone and they had no venue to even get married at. And some of them went up north, some of them did it out of state. So it took a pretty big toll on the business. We got a small insurance claim back, but it wasn't even a quarter of the amount that our deposits that we given out. And then obviously we didn't do any of those dates, and that the insurance claim that we got, it was like almost 6 months later. So it wasn't even a quarter of what we had booked. Is what we got. So I had to add that in, and we'll honor it as if the contract is still full. Next item on here, and again, we touched on this already, price changes. Saver First Choice Catering reserves the right to adjust prices in response to fluctuations in the market conditions, including but not limited to changes in the cost of ingredients, labor, fuel, and other operational expenses. Any price adjustments will be communicated to the client via new invoice or proposal sent to email and or call or text. So we'll never change a price on something that without telling you first. And honestly, to this day, we've never changed a price on something after you've booked, which is why we want to get people's deposit in, because for the most part, or to this day, we've never changed. If you've already put your deposit in, even if it was a year ago, I'm not going to go through and change your prices. It's just, it's not something that we would do. This is more so if you're still in the middle of the booking process, you're getting new proposals, your proposals are changing. And if I update the prices in the system and they put things on into the proposal that I'd already updated the price on individually, then this would matter to you. But as far as changing the prices, we just don't change anything once you're booked. We'd rather you be a glass or we be a glass door and you pay what you see and that's it. Now, not to say if you change to something later down the road, because you still have the option to change your proposal even up to 14 days out from your event. Obviously, if those prices are changed, you probably wouldn't know if you didn't see the price before anyways, but those prices would reflect new changes if we added new things or changed things. So without you guys physically changing anything, we would not just go in and modify the prices. It just doesn't make sense to me. Next is venue fees. And we touched on this a little bit before. Certain venues require a venue fee, whether a flat rate or a percentage of the bill, which will be passed on to the client. And I put that will be passed on to the client in bold via line item or addition to the service charge. So if the venue fee is passed to us, we pass it to the client. It's simple. That's we want you to know that up front. We don't add the service charge or any of these fees on at the end. All of this stuff is on at the beginning. Should it get forgotten or should you not know which venue you're picked out, then obviously it would be added on after the fact. And in those situations is why I put it in here, because if we forget to put it on your initial proposal and then you go to book and then we go, oh no, the venue, you're at a venue that has a 10% or 12% fee, we're going to adjust it at that time. And then if we do get a question about it from the client, we just refer them to this contract and say it is in there that it will be passed on to you, because we don't want any surprises. But also as a client, whether it's with us or anybody, you should do your due diligence and read through your vendor's contract before booking. You don't want to be hit with any surprises. And actually, this is on my website too, so you don't even have to wait to get a proposal. You can see this on my website at any time. All right, next is venues. Some venues have different needs than others. Large properties, beaches, etc., will require additional staff, limited menu choices, and or rentals at the discretion of Sabre First Choice Catering. Why I put that is some venues are on a beach and I have to provide my own power, water, ice, gas, tent, everything. Some venues are in a nice air conditioned facility with a kitchen on site and all the facilities I need. So should your event be at one of those places, we're used to doing this stuff. If we need, say, an oven or a tent or something, that for the most part, if we need it and it's within our means, it's not going to cost us anything extra. Like, say, we have our own tents in house, we have our own work tables and all of our stuff for back of the house. I'm not going to charge my client for that. But should we need an oven, we own our ovens and I priced myself for our facilities or our oven for half of what anybody else is charging. And I just do that because we own them, and then it doesn't require me to actually get it from another rental company. I can do it myself, but having to bring that is an additional charge. So, but again, we're realistic about it. We charge half of what you're going to get it from any other rental company for. Some properties are huge. You know, we do, like I said, beaches. There's some like outdoor properties that have like maybe a house in the middle of the property and it's on, you know, 10 acres and the front where the wedding takes place is on the front on a great lawn, and where the kitchen is and where our vehicle is. I mean, it could be a long time. So for stuff like that, we'd probably add on a couple more staff, you know, and then we always like to have walkie talkies and stuff. Not that it pertains to you guys, but, for big events like that, where we're very spread out as a business, we try to keep in touch with each other. But the larger the property, the kind of more teams we need to organize our staff in. So, that's why this clause is in here. Service charge. We get this question quite a bit. So what we charge at this time is 18%. shopped out competitors, we're right in the pocket, we're lower and higher than a lot of our competitors around here. And how it reads in the contract is a service charge will be added to all events, including but not limited to staff, rentals, setup, teardown, drop-offs, and vendors. The service charge, not to be confused with gratuity, covers all outside costs of having an event. Meaning, while your event may be only 4 to 6 hours, it may be dozens of hours beforehand in the making, kitchen staff prepping, office work, emails, menu consultations, etc. Vehicle costs like insurance, maintenance, etc. Cleaning products, waste disposal, and everything it takes on our end to make it perfectly smooth event on your end. Why I put it in there like that, as if I'm actually explaining it to you and not in lawyer jargon, is because I want you to really understand that this isn't an arbitrary fee. You know, I have staff in here 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, whether you've booked or thinking about booking, have questions about our services. I have people here ready to answer the phone and take care of you through the whole process. So I can't really just charge $300 a plate. That doesn't make sense. In a restaurant, you're trying to get all these different costs out of your plate of food. And with vendors and catering, it just doesn't make sense to do that, because it would just be astronomical. So we split things up between food and service and rentals, and that has to be split up just in our industry. So that's what the service charge is for. Some people confuse it with the gratuity. The gratuity for us is at the discretion of our clients. Of course, our staff loves tips, but it's completely up to you to tip them, you know, and we can talk about those questions through your proposal process, but we just want to make it very clear that in our service charge, that it's not just an arbitrary charge that we're just charging on top of you for no reason. There is a lot of stuff that goes into this. There, if you do have rentals, we have calls and emails between rental companies, and there's just a lot of things that go into catering outside of just that, you know, 6 hour window that we're there. And again, if you have any questions about this stuff, you know, you're more than welcome to ask your sales rep or whoever you're talking to, you know, what that's for. And they're going to tell you the exact same thing. You can read it verbatim from our contract and know what it's going towards. Next line item is setup and breakdown. Saver will schedule the appropriate amount of staff to assist in breakdown and setup of the event. Certain tasks may require additional fee to set up, such as, but not limited to, chairs, tables, decorations, etc. What we found, and this is across a lot of different line items, what we found is that there are a lot of people who have never done this before on the client side. So their wedding is the first time that they've experienced catering, or having to hire vendors, you know, or weddings and funerals, I always say, are the first time people deal with this kind of thing. So why we put that in there is because we do events for a living. This is what we do. This is what my staff does. We do 200 or more events a year. We know how much staff we need for something. And again, I'm going to say this because it's not supposed to be a sales pitch or anything. I don't want to sell my customer something that we don't need on site, because then it would just deplete my resources. So at max, we'll handle 2 to 3 events in a day. We don't take on any more than that, simply because we want to keep quality high. And that's not just food. That's quality service as well. And for us to do that, we have to have the appropriate amount of staff there. So what we run into is that people get their proposal and the client wants to dictate how much staff we actually need at an event. And it's a really hard discussion to have, because we do 200 events a year. And for a lot of people, this is their first event of their life, or maybe they've done a few, or it's the mom and she did a wedding 20 years ago, or whatever it is. I know we might operate a little different than maybe people you've hired in the past, but I assure you, it's only to get the best service and best quality out of our business for you. We don't want extra staff standing around waiting for something to do. We want to make sure there's an appropriate amount of staff to not only make everything happen in a timely manner, but also that I don't want to pay for the extra people, and I don't want to charge my client for the extra people to just make us look like we're not doing anything. So Some events call for more, some events call for less. It just depends on what you get. Depends on the venue space. We have a formula we use. There are exceptions to that formula. And you know, everything matters. There's a lot of moving parts in catering. You know, you have buffet service or plated service. That's going to require two totally different amounts of people. We have hors d'oeuvre parties versus full dinner parties. Going to matter. It's going to matter, you know, how many staff there. If there's a lot of rentals that need to be washed versus people get disposable plates and flatware, is going to require a different amount of staff. So this is here just to say, we're going to put the appropriate amount of people there to set up. And a lot of times what we'll do if like for a plated meal is we'll have like a setup crew or like a normal size crew come in at the beginning, like we would normally need. And if we needed a plated dinner, all of the plated staff would come in later because it's a lot easier to manage a smaller group during setup than to have a sea of extra people. You know, only so many people are needed to set up a buffet, right? One or two people can handle it, no problem. So for three or four people to try to do a one or two person's job doesn't make us look good either. So we'll always try to do a appropriate amount of staff on that. And I just want to make sure that it's clear in the contract too, when you're reading it, that that's the information given. So after that, travel time. So travel time for us, we don't have a lot. We don't go too far from us. We'll go an hour or two max away. There are special circumstances for repeating clients or off season through the summer where we want more events that will make exceptions to this. But in general, our travel time will be billed at $25 per hour per employee for events that are 1 hour or farther away from our facility. So where we're situated at, we're in Fort Myers. So it pretty much, there's no travel time for anything local between like here, Cape Coral, Naples, Lehigh, any of those places. Even like Alva is close by, but once we start getting into the Marco Island, Punta Gorda, Arcadia, those are starting to hit that hour mark. Then that's when you're going to start seeing that. And you'll see that the $25 an hour isn't what we charge people on site. This is just so that I can give my staff that extra hour of pay to come and do your event. We're not making any money on that. It is just simply so that I can get more people to want to drive an hour. A lot of people don't want to drive that hour, and it's an incentive for my staff if they're going to get paid to drive to the event that, that they're going to want to sign up for that specific event. Next is a breakage / loss clause. Client assumes full responsibility for any damage or loss, whether the client's property or company's property, of any equipment, including but not limited to catering equipment, tents, tables, chairs, linens, glassware, china, or flatware. To this day, we've never backbilled somebody for anything. So this is in there because I was looking at other contracts and this is what they have, and it protects me should something happen. I'm not going to backbill somebody for two broken glasses. That's crazy. It just doesn't make sense. So that is in there non-arbitrarily, but there will be a day in the future, hopefully not, that maybe this comes up. But to this day, we've never backbilled somebody for any damages or anything from their side or my side. It just doesn't make sense unless it's a something big happens. And knock on wood, that hasn't happened yet. Leftovers. This is an important one, especially because there's kind of a mixed understanding of what it is. So I'm going to read it for you and then we'll go through it. In the event leftovers are left to the client, Saver First Choice Catering will not be held liable for any foodborne illness caused from food being left out. Leftovers are, and in bold, not guaranteed. And it is at the discretion of the staff to leave leftovers. Leftovers are not the property of the client. Leftovers are the company's insurance policy to make sure the event does not run out of food. Leftovers will be distributed to the vendors and staff working the event before, in bold, being left for the client. Why this is so important is because, and it might be just like an older way of thinking for things in the past that, you know, you get a catered meal from, you get a catered meal from a restaurant and they give you a platter of food. This is what you go. For what we're doing is you tell us how many people are at your event. We agree to feed that many people. Not we agree to feed that many people and then give you all of the extra we made. So Excuse me, my computer keeps going off, so.
Not a big deal.
So, do we leave leftovers? Absolutely. We absolutely leave leftovers. We don't take anything back to our facility. So if it's not left for you, we either distribute it to our staff or throw it away. So we have to put this disclaimer in there because we have heated it. It has sat. It's been your event. And then technically, food code wise, anything out for 4 hours needs to be tossed after it's been heated up. So this is to protect us just in case somebody does get sick, which again has never happened. And also so that there's an understanding that if you should see some leftovers and they're not packed up for the client at the end, that's not the client's not entitled to those leftovers. They did not pay for those leftovers. They paid to feed that amount of people. If that amount of people ate, we're not obligated to give you more. But, and I say this in general, because 99% of the time, 90% of the time, I don't want to overpromise, especially, okay, for instance, weddings are a lot different than a home party. But for like a home party or a wedding, we always leave, for a wedding, we'll leave like a small box, you know, if there's extra 5 to 10 servings of like everything that they had on their buffet for the bride and groom. We always leave that. So, sorry about that. Had a little technical thing. So if we, for a house party, we'd always try to leave leftovers if we have them. And in general, we try to leave leftovers if we have them. I just don't want there to be a situation where the customer is obligated, because we did have a couple disgruntled employees or a couple disgruntled clients when there wasn't like enough leftovers. And really, it's a liability issue. And it's not exactly what you paid for. We're happy to do it if we can, but we just don't want to promise something just in case there's not, you know, some events are closer than others, but when we make extra food, it's to make sure that, you know, the few people in line that might want to take two of something or more, you know, we're covered for that. The last thing we want to do is have somebody not able to eat something. And then our staff too, for weddings, they're there for 6 to 8 hours. I want to send my staff home with something. And even if you didn't necessarily get a vendor meal, if I have the means, if our business has the means to feed the vendors, even if vendor meals weren't purchased, if we can, we're happy to do it. We just don't want to promise something that isn't a guarantee, because then if you have 100 people, we're not going to say we're just going to make 150 servings. We'll make 115, 110, you know, depending on what it is, to make sure we always have some extra. But in general, we just want to be open about how our policy is with it. Food code says we're not supposed to do it. I understand there's nuance. I understand we're in people's homes, and sometimes parties go on after we leave. And if we're doing an hors d'oeuvre party and there's some extra meats and cheeses and stuff, and I'll take a plate out of your cabinet and I'll make a new display on your dishes when we're leaving, we'll clean up everything. And then you get like, so we'll figure it out. We like to be real about stuff. I just don't want a disgruntled client because what they thought in their head or what they were entitled to wasn't necessarily what we offer or what most people offer. It's like going to a restaurant. You're not going to order, you know, 10 servings and something at a restaurant and then be like, how much you got left back in the kitchen? You know, it's just not what you would do. So hopefully that answers your question. You know, we don't want to come off like petty or anything. It's just, I can't promise out of all the events that we do that every event's going to have leftovers, especially like a plated meal. Like obviously there's going to be less overage on a plated meal because it's counted than like on a buffet or a self-service. So next line item, field kitchens and trucks, cases of food in the catering trucks, very large food displays are not the property of the client. Clients are not allowed to go through catering field kitchens and catering trucks. Cases of beverages and field kitchens and trucks are not the property of the client. Field kitchens also refers to even in your home. So if we bring our hot boxes and all of our stuff in your house, those are ours. Those are not the property of the client. So there's no situation where like a client should be like going through, you know, our tents at a wedding, or obviously if you need something, we're happy to help. But A lot of times, I mean, I've had customers previously, not with my company, but in companies that I work for, where like the father would come and grab like a case of soda or a case of beer out of the tent. And it's like, well, we offered that. That was our property to serve to your clients. It wasn't exactly there for you to put in the back of your car. So this doesn't pertain to most people because most people probably wouldn't do a thing like that, but it has happened to where I had to put it in here. And the same thing goes in your home. If, you know, we have hot boxes and coolers and all that stuff, those are our tools to make sure that you're served, but those aren't your things to go through, if that makes sense. You know, we try to be pretty structured and professional in how we handle these situations. And for 99% of the time, it's never going to happen. But that 1% of the time, it's good to have something like that in here so that there's no gray area when they say, well, who told me that or who said that, or I thought that this, we paid for it. It's all in here. So, field kitchen, and it's a liability issue, right? So if you come in through my field kitchen at the beach, trip over a cooler, hurt yourself, now you're, my property. It's a liability issue too. So there's tons of reasons. I say it's an event. Enjoy your event. Don't worry about the smoke and mirrors behind the curtain. We're going to make it all happen for you. You know, if you need something, my staff is there to help. There's no real need for you to ever have to come back and help yourself to stuff in the back of trucks or anything like that. Up next, we have collections. Clients will be responsible to pay all expenses and reasonable attorney fees associated with any action brought to recover unpaid contract fees due to Saver First Choice Catering LLC. Knock on wood, we've never had to deal with anything like this. Our policies now are we don't back bill anymore anyways. So final payment where it used to be due the day of, starting this season, we are making that payment due 2 weeks prior. And that is just to make sure timelines are in, staff is scheduled, food can be ordered. I'm trying to eliminate the exchange of money on site between my staff and the client. So all of this stuff can be done ahead of time. Because there are times where at weddings, if we hadn't got paid, or we'd have to like go to the bride and groom on the dance floor and be like, hey, congratulations. You know, we're done here. Oh yeah. Also, we haven't got our check yet. And I want to remove that friction that could possibly be there. It's kind of tacky, in my opinion, and I think there's a lot better ways to handle this. I know some weddings had their wedding planners pay all the vendors, but this year I feel like it's just easier for everybody, including the client, because all of their final, you know, modifications are due 14 days prior. Just knock out the payment at that time too, and then just worry about having your event, and that's it. Enjoy your party without worrying about vendors coming up and asking for money. So, and then we haven't had any situations where we've needed an attorney or anything. So again, we haven't had to use any of that, but it is important to cover yourself when you're in these contracts. And I know I'm speaking from my first person point of view on a lot of this, but I'm sure there'll be people watching this that either have catering companies or vendor companies, and, you know, think about it too, from your perspective, if there's anything you can do ahead of time to protect yourself without making it feel like basically a car salesman contract where you're there for 45 minutes to an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours signing a car away, then it's in your best interest to do that. Cover your butt. Next, rentals. Saver First Choice Catering is not responsible for setup, breakdown, or moving of any rentals purchased through other vendors. Saver will not be responsible for moving chairs other than initial setup unless otherwise agreed upon by line item in the contract. Why we did this is that, in my opinion, I'm going to say that because I don't want everybody to attack me. In my opinion, the caterer ends up, and again, this is just, I'm talking candid here, kind of gets abused, right? So the caterer is the one that generally brings more staff and brings help and all of that stuff. So if there's things on site that need to be done, that was an afterthought to say the planner, or an afterthought to whoever's planning the event, like the bride, groom, people at their houses, generally this responsibility, they're going to want it to fall on the caterer. So we offer a ton of rentals, and the rentals that we don't have in house, we sub out through a third party. So if we cover it, then of course we're responsible for it. But if the client chooses to go through another rental company and say they don't want to pay the extra fee to have them, you know, set it up or break it down at the end of the night, and they assume that the caterer is going to do it, then that we're not okay with that. So like we talked about before, I'm going to have the appropriate amount of time and an appropriate amount of staff to take on the things that we booked for you. Anything else that you want to add on the day of, in general, would not be our responsibility. Are there exceptions to that? Of course. But the big one that over the last couple of years that we've changed was moving chairs. A lot of people, and I get it, a lot of budgets aren't the same, and some budgets don't call for it. But a lot of people will want to use the same chairs for their ceremony and move all of those chairs for their reception, which is fine. Rental companies offer that service. Venues offer that service. Wedding planners, not all of them, but wedding planners should offer that service, or at least refer somebody to a rental company that does. Because if you go through a rental company and you're paying the rental company for the chairs and the delivery and the pickup, and the caterer, you didn't pay at all for those chairs or tables or linens or anything like that, and now you expect them to move, and so it could be 50 chairs, it could be 300. You know, that's something that I need two or three or more designated people to do. And at that time, it's also your cocktail hour. So if I pull staff from being able to pass food or clear dishes to move those chairs that were not paid through for our company, now I'm sacrificing my service for an afterthought by a planner or a venue. So we put this in there because if you get it through us, then we're more than happy to help. If we have time and things are slow, some of my staff is happy to help. But we never want the client or a planner to think it's okay to pay a third party company and have our staff do stuff for that third party company without being compensated. I don't think it's a very fair business practice. And, you know, we go through a lot of planning to make sure we're set up for what we need. And if we have to stop what we need in the middle for an unanticipated, like, task in the middle of your event, it could really put us behind too. So we don't want to sacrifice our service for something like that. So get it through us, get it through a rental company. It doesn't matter. We just ask that if you get things through a rental company, that you have that rental company be in charge of their rentals. I think that's fair. This also goes with, and it's not in here, but since we're on the subject, even like a third party food vendor or a third party bar service, you know, we offer bar services. We have full liquor license, but if you want to provide the alcohol, you're more than welcome to, and we could do just the bar service, or we could sell you the alcohol too. But there are some venues and some friction points with venues that want the catering staff to stay after hours for the bar service. Well, if you don't get the bar service through me and I offer it, and then you want my staff to stay and clean up after the bar service because the bar service doesn't want to pick up their plates and napkins and stuff, even though we've already cleaned up dinner, even though we've already put up chairs, even though we've already taken out trashes and all of our stuff is done, and I have to leave two or three staff behind to clean up after a third party bartender, I don't think that that's a fair business practice. You know, if we had the bar on site and say there was tips, then all of my staff, they split tips evenly between everybody. And I think it's just not a very fair thing to have my staff clean up after a bartending services that are sending trash out into the event without having the responsibility of at least picking it up. So any third party, anything, we try not to deal with it. And it's not in a bad or condescending way. You hired us for this certain task. You hired them for this certain task. Let them be responsible for the things that you paid them for. Let us be responsible for the things that you paid us for. I think that's fair. And I think that anybody looking from the outside in, that's a good explanation of why people should hire competent vendors, whether that be a rental company, a bar service, a dessert bar. You know, we've seen everything. And for the most part, the caterer just ends up, you know, picking up after all these third-party vendors. So we're happy to do it during while we're there, but to have us stay after hours to pick up after another vendor is not something that we're necessarily willing to do. So yeah, and all these things, you can reach out to us. You know, I'm absolutely an open book if you want. So next is permits. We haven't really had to deal with this ourselves, but we have worked at places that do this. But if fire permits are required from the local cities, permits will be obtained by the client and will be charged applicable fees. So that doesn't necessarily pertain to us doing anything, but should you say get a tent for your event, there's a fire permit required, but most of your rental companies are going to take care of that when they rent you the tent. So it shouldn't be an issue. If somebody rents you a tent or you are indoors and they are not giving you a fire extinguisher or giving you a fire permit, then you should question them on that, because you can't put up a tent and have people eating and be under it altogether without a fire permit. And it's not expensive. It's just something that has to be through the city that, you know, for that one day, you need a 1 day fire permit for that event. Next, to damage waiver. Now this is different for breakage and loss, because breakage and loss has to do with rentals. Damage waiver states Saver First Choice Catering and all of its affiliates will not be responsible for any damage to indoor surfaces, including but not limited to countertops, floors, walls, or other structures like water lines, electrical lines, landscapings, buildings, or patio flooring due to rust, stains, scrapes, or scratches. Why I put this in here is because we did a party a few years ago and I was the chef at it. And after we left, their party went on for hours and we got a call. The party was on Saturday. We got a call Tuesday saying that we scratched their stove. Now, had it been one of my other chefs or somebody else, I'd have been like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm going to take care of this. Let me figure it out. But I was there and I was the chef and I cleaned the stove and I cleaned everything up. And, you know, we always leave things just as good or better than how we found them. We wipe down people's fridges, microwaves, stoves, in and out. We take the burners off and all this stuff. And they sent me a pretty large, you know, scrape or something. It was a couple pictures and I can't really like, it looked like a big, long, fat scrape. Either way, I know it wasn't us. And I have insurances to take care of this stuff. So it's not really like I've never had to make a claim, but it's not like I couldn't. The issue is that since it was me, I have to, if it was one of my chefs, I would have had to take the side of the client no matter what. But it just so happens they got the owner of the company on their event as the chef, and I was there beginning to end, and they said that they got scratched and it didn't. So this is why I put this in here, because obviously if we had done something, you know, we will take full fault. But since she didn't have any pictures of it beforehand, I went and looked, or I saw the pictures of it. I know that's not how I left it. I know that when I left that they had a couple of big homemade, it was a home wedding, big couple like homemade cakes that the mother of the bride or groom made, and they were on big metal like stands. And in my head, somebody probably put the cake stand on the glass stove, cut it at 2 a.m. We were out of there by 9 and probably scraped it. I don't know. I tried to reason with them as best I could. I tried to give them cause they were regulars too. We'd done their event several times, which is another reason why I would hope that they, understood, but it was pretty clear that they were adamant on getting their glass top replaced. And from what I know from the bride and groom, because it was actually their parents' house, is that the parents made the bride and groom actually pay for the glass top. Opinion based, or my opinion, I don't think that necessarily should have happened. But either way, if I can't definitively say that's not how we left something, then I I can't be responsible for paying for something that I can definitely say that we did not leave it that way. Had it been a staff person of mine and I wasn't there, then of course I have to take the side of the client. But in this special circumstance, it was me. So I put a damage waiver in there. It's never been an issue. There was one issue with a rental company that when they were dropping off the rentals, it wasn't us, but it was the company that we contracted. They backed their box truck into like the corner of the house and it broke their rain gutter. And for that, it was really easy. We called the rental company and we only deal with, you know, people we like dealing with, and they were happy to, you know, fix it for them. So no harm, no foul. They were all touched up, but it's just important to have stuff like this to protect you in the contract. Next on the list, staff client etiquette. This was a brainchild of mine because there are situations when you're working with people closely in their homes and you're working with like families, and it's a little bit more of an intimate setting than say like a restaurant. Obviously you go to a restaurant, all the staff is at work. When we go to somebody's house, we're in their home. So sometimes they think, you know, different rules apply, but we hold ourselves as professionally as possible. So we don't want to treat it as if we're in a home. So, or in a restaurant. So how it reads is, all staff report to their lead supervisor on site. Client must go through the lead supervisor before having to pay. Oh, sorry. Let me restart that. All staff report to their lead supervisor on site. Client must go through the lead supervisor before having staff do any tasks. Staff will not be offered alcohol by client. Staff persons are not permitted to drink on site and will not accept drinks from client. This includes off-site and in-home caterings. This is a two-part thing. First, we have a special lead on site that handles basically running all the staff. It's very common for a planner or one of the homeowners or somebody to just say like, hey, can you come help me with blank? A lot of times my staff is busy doing stuff and that the lead has told them. So how we kind of fix that problem was we just explain to the customer, and we have a procedure for this too, that the lead person on site, that's going to be your contact. And if you need anything, let them know. And then if they can help you, they will. And if they want to relay that to one of the staff members, they will, to make sure you get taken care of. And then procedure wise, for us personally, when we get on site into whether it's a venue or a person's home, the lead person themselves goes in first without the rest of the staff. The rest of the staff hangs out kind of by the truck while the lead goes in, gets a lay of the land, talks to the client, you know, asserts that point of contact. And then so they can come out and relate to the rest of the staff really what's going on. And the last thing I want is a group of four or five staff or more wandering around the client. It's just, it doesn't look right and doesn't really establish that connection between the lead and the client. So, and then the second part of this was the alcohol part. You're in someone's house, they're having a good time. It's really easy and really common for them to kind of invite you into their party. What I tell my staff is that's not your party. It's the client's party and we're the help. So, you know, we, as much as we're friendly and talkative and have a good time and upbeat, we never want to cross the line over to the friend stage we never want it to be confused as to why we're there. We're there to serve the client. We're there to make sure their event goes off perfectly and it gets cleaned up perfectly and everything's safe. And we can't do that if the client or if somebody is drinking alcohol. It should be a pretty simple thing, but the amount that it happens warranted me putting it in the contract. I would say more than 20% of the time. So more than 1 in 5 times when we're in someone's home, they offer our staff alcohol. And it's just because you're in your home, but we are there to do a job. We're there to be professional and we're there to make sure you have a good time. But to make sure that at the end of your good time, everything's cleaned up and it was like we were never there. And for us to do that, we have to hold ourselves in that professional manner. So I created this staff/client etiquette clause just to express that to the client, because we get asked a lot to join in the fun. And for us to be, professional, we have to hold our standards. So yeah, there's that. And I'm going to actually split this off. Actually, no, we're almost done. I was going to do another video, but we only have a few more to go. Cool. All right. Next, bar service. All bar services include 4 hours of bar service. Any more hours will be billed accordingly. Substitutions are at the discretion of Saver First Choice Catering. Those substitutions, really, they're not going to be like big things. They're going to be mostly for like well bars or, you know, little stuff like say we couldn't get it. But in general, the beers and wines and everything, we let the guest let the client choose in our three bar package or liquor packages, designate which kind of liquors are in those. So should there be a situation where a certain liquor isn't available, then we will trade it out for a similar like price point liquor. But of course, if we would let the client know that hey, it's never happened. I'm just saying a situation that could possibly happen, but that's what that's there for. Really, this is there to say that 4 hours are included, which it says it on our packages, but it's always good to be very thorough and very clear about your services. Tents is the next line item. Tents require a safety package, which includes all necessary safety equipment required by state, fire marshal, and our insurance carrier, fire extinguishers, exit signs, etc. We touched on this a little before. This just specifies tents, but there are other venue. If the venue doesn't have an existing fire suppression system, that's another way when you need to get a fire permit. But this is specifically with tents, just so people know going into it. And we don't even rent them anymore. At the very beginning, we were subbing them out, but I'm just going to let the professionals take care of that. So even if I subbed it out, I was still having to answer a bunch of questions that I'm not comfortable with. So if you do need something like that, that we don't offer, we're going to send you to somebody that we trust. And by all means, you can choose whoever you want, but we'll always send you to another vendor that we trust to take care of you and that we've worked with before. So that's tents. Third party food and beverage. We also touched on this a little bit. No third party food, whether homemade from another vendor, whether homemade or from another vendor, is permitted to be near or on the same table as Saver's food display. Saver First Choice Catering staff will prioritize our food and beverage and display and equipment before addressing third-party debris. Saver will not be responsible for pickup of third-party vendors' garbage if it will result in a later departure time than set in the invoice. This has evolved over time. Things were added to it. The third-party food thing is mostly just a liability for us. So if we have a buffet out and we're in a house or we're in an ethnic wedding and someone wants to put some homemade stuff down on that table, well, now it looks like it's a part of our buffet. Should somebody get sick or something, we don't want that liability. So we just say it has to be on a separate table, and it won't have any of our equipment around it. It won't have any of our name plaques or anything like that around it. We have to make sure that they know that Saver, our company, did not produce that, just in case something happens. Also, this has to do with like the bar thing I was mentioning earlier. The third-party debris, third-party garbage, we are happy to pick up while we're there if it's not going to inhibit the event. So meaning we have staff going around cleaning. So obviously we're not going to leave, the ice cream people's ice cream cups on the table. That looks bad. So while we're there, we're going to clean everything. If we have an out time of 10 p.m., we have to make sure we are out at 10 p.m. That's not a end time. And then it just takes us made up amount of time to get out. We put an end/staff departure on all of our proposals so that it's very clear to the customer when we are leaving. Having said that, that last hour that we're there is designated cleanup time. So the bar can probably still be going for another 30 minutes or so, but we're going to start wrapping up. We're going to start breaking down buffets, making sure all the tables are clear, making sure the trashes are taken out. Cause a lot of venues, they'll have dumpsters on site or we have to take it with us. So we're going to make sure that at that out time, all of our responsibility is 100% done. When there's a third party involved, whether it's a dessert or bar or anything like that, if we have time, then of course we'll help clean that up. But if it's going to result in staff having to stay later than that end departure time, then we will not assist that third party. And that's mostly just because we, like I said before, we don't backbill. So I'm not going to send out another invoice for you the week after your event and have you upset at me because I got you for an extra 30 minutes on 10 staff people. It just doesn't, I'm always trying to eliminate friction. I'm always trying to make things crystal clear. And I always want to make sure that there's going into your event, there is an understanding of what we are there to do, when we're there to do it, and when we're done. And I think that it's done great for us because now my staff, nobody wants to not, I shouldn't say nobody. Some people are more than willing to stay later, but like a lot of staff, they have families, they have things off. They know that they're scheduled till 10. If at the end of the event, a customer is able to go, well, we actually need you to stay here till 11 or 12. Now you're causing friction with the lead and you're causing friction with the staff. And then the staff is working later. I just don't want to deal with that so much. So it's very important that when you're booking the event, you know what time your end time is. And then we're going to cater to that time. We just don't want any surprises on the day of. We like to be very organized, in and out, and the whole process. That's what it calls for. So, next line item, contract violations. Again, before I even go into this, we haven't had any issues with this at all since we've opened. It's been 5 years, so it's pretty good. This has to be in all your contracts just because you want to cover your butt. And if you don't, it only takes one time to really inhibit a business or even close it down. So, contract violations are subject to additional fees and or legal remedies, to which client will be responsible for all associated legal fees and costs. Why that's in there and why it's so short and concise is because we're super clear from the very beginning of what's in here and what we're kind of come to do. If there's something that we were not clear about is one thing, but if there's some sort of litigation or somebody gets sick or anything like that, I've covered reasons why. One, if everything's in our control, like if the food is in our control, I can guarantee, you know, nobody's going to get sick. Everything's handled right. Everything's clean. If things are not in our control, things are left out. I've stated in here, you know, that it's the client's responsibility. That's just one example, but everybody needs to cover themselves, because as much as we'd love to operate not like this, there are crazy people in this world, period. Most people are not crazy, but there are crazy people in this world. We've worked with them. Some people are in our families. Some people are, there are friends, or there are crazy people in this world that will find some issue with everything. And you have to do your due diligence as a business owner to cover yourself if you can. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be a headache. It doesn't mean that you might get stuck, you know, dealing with lawyers and stuff, but should you cover yourself, you're going to have a lot easier of a time defending yourself versus if you had nothing and then they come after you and they're, you know, much more equipped to take you on in that sort of way. So, that is the end of my terms and conditions and like my contract. The next part of this, which I think it's very good to put in from the very beginning, and especially because we're all doing this to get paid, is to make their payment options very clear. So for us personally, and I'll read the rest of this. The last part of that says, Saver First Choice Catering reserves the right to make changes to this contract at any time with or without approval from the client. I have read and I understand the above order. It meets with my approval. I consider our agreement definite and confirmed. I've never changed this against somebody's. I just have to put that in there again to cover myself. Should I make a change in here and we have 200 open proposals and we forget to sign one? Nothing's going to be, it's going to be like small stuff. It's never going to be big stuff, but I have to put that in there to protect myself. But following that is important. It's our payment info. And why I think you should put this in your contract is because from the very first time you send it to them, you want them to be, you want to be clear on what your needs are. So for us, we require a 50% deposit to book the event. So you don't want that to come as a surprise later. So and we have certain payment options. So we accept Zelle, Venmo, Cash App, cash, check, and credit card. So, right. So we have six ways to get paid. The credit card is going to result in a fee. It's listed right in here. Everything else, there is no fee. So if I pushed you to only do credit card and then charge you the fee, morally to me, that's wrong, but you have six ways to pay. So if you have that mapped out in here, it's really easy. Now, I will say that most people still, after all of this, don't read through their contract. It's astonishing, but I don't know. I would read through it. But so the payment info, what I say is event deposit. Upon signed contract, 50% deposit is required to hold the event date. A credit card would be held on file. A lot of times you don't hold a credit card on file, but it's in there just in case one day I have a system that's able to, a lot easier. I just wanted to state it in the contract. Final payment. Event must be paid in full 14 days prior to event. Any event booked within 14 days will need to be paid in full at the time of booking. Late payment. Late payment will result in a late fee of 5% of total bill if paid within 1 week of the event. More than 1 week late will result in 10% of the total bill late fee. 2 weeks or more will be sent out to collections and filed with credit bureaus. Have I ever had to do that? No, we've never had to do that. But we've had to chase people down. We, you know, and especially when it's regulars, it's hard. But we've had to do that. So we I've never charged anybody a late fee, but as we grow, there's going to be more and more situations where I have to. So checks, all checks should be made out and payable to Saver First Choice Catering. Cash payments are subject to a 3% discount at the discretion of Saver First Choice Catering. Gratuity. It's very good to have a gratuity thing in your contract. Gratuity is at the discretion of the client. Our staff works hard to give the best possible experience and are very grateful and have appreciative and they're appreciative to receive gratuities. Tip jars will be put out on bar setups unless otherwise specified. As a business owner, I want my staff to make money. I want them to do good. I want them to want to come to work. So I put this stuff in there, not only just to be clear that like the service charge isn't a gratuity, but also a reminder to my clients that it is customary or not customary, but it is nice to tip your staff. And being clear about that up front is just for me, it's always going to be better. Payment options for us, no fee options include cash, check, Venmo, Zelle, and Cash App. And in there I put, obviously cash, we would schedule a meetup. For check, it would be mailed to our mailing address. Venmo has the name and the PIN of what it needs to be sent Venmo, and Zelle has the email associated. They're set up for if they want to book you right now, they have the means to do it. They know how to do it. The disclaimer before says, please use memo for checks or notes on electronic payments to state the name of contact, event date, and invoice number. The last thing you want as a business owner or a vendor is to have a bill come in or a payment to come in and not know which event it's for. So these things are very important to state in here. So people have a very clear understanding on how to pay and how we, when we receive it, how we can categorize it. Cause if I have to spend 30 or 40 minutes, you know, looking through proposals to see which one match the amount, it's going to be, it's just time consuming. It's a waste of time. So be very clear with people. And then finally, credit card fee, 3.5% fee on an invoice will be sent to your email. So in all disclosure, the 3.5% fee that we charge the people when we get their deposit, I do not put anything more than what hits the bank into their invoice. So most of the time it's not even 3.5%. I just put 3.5% to cover that cost, but whatever enters my bank is what actually gets put into the proposal. So a lot of times it's less than that. And then when they go to make their final payment, there's a, you know, maybe there's like an overage of a dollar or something, but for that initial deposit, it, most of the time it's not even the 3.5% because I'm just putting in what they put into my bank. So I hope that, I mean, that was pretty long, but I hope that that answered at least questions about my contract. If anybody has any questions about, you know, where I got it, if any of you guys want a copy of it, by all means, go on my website, copy it, modify it to your own, make, you know, in all reality, that's what I did. I found somebody else's contract that I liked that wasn't incredibly long that I can read in 10 minutes or less. And I modified it and added it and customized and took away things that didn't pertain to my business and just to give myself a starting point. And you guys are more than welcome to do that with this. You, everybody operates their business how they want to operate it. That's the beauty of living here, that you have the freedom to do that. And I think that it's important that even if you're a small business just starting out, you have something. You have something to relay messages between you and the client without having to explain all of it. I think it's good to and have your butt protected. But I would be curious to know if anybody is a lawyer or studying law or anything, if I have any holes in this. If I have any holes in this legally, please reach out and let me know. And I'm more than happy to go through and see what I'm missing. But this is more so not just a contract between me and the client, but it's also like a terms and how we do business. So I hope everybody liked that. Saver F&B podcast. Reach out if you want to be on the podcast. Shoot me an email. Find me on Instagram, Facebook. You know, I'm here. Go into my catering website. I'm pretty open book. So see you later. This is a late night. This is a long one. Have a good night.